This is a production of the White Dragon Podcast Network, WDPN, bringing you the very best in internet talk radio.
Welcome to the boss fight, folks. Unfortunately, we're talking about Kingdom Hearts. That boss fight is Sephiroth, and you are screwed. Folks, welcome to Boss Fight, the WDPN video game review podcast. I am Kevin Kessler, and I am joined once again by my same esteemed panel, who will be dissecting a video game here today. First, folks, coming to you from right across from my position is Mr. Kabla Goobla himself, TJ Bogart.
Dance, water, dance!
And right over here, the first lady and only lady of WDPN, my wife, Jay Lee, Jacqueline Leon Kessler.
Hey there, where's the pow pow fruit?
Exactly. We're going to be sharing some pow pow fruit here today. We're going to be dropping some knowledge pow pow fruits on you guys today because we are talking about a game-changing game. This is the game that married two completely foreign concepts together in a dazzling display of awesomeness, folks, and that is none other than Kingdom Hearts. And now, I know there's been several Kingdom Hearts games, but we are going to be discussing the first Kingdom Hearts game because I believe every single one of these games can get its own podcast.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, we're going to be diving into the bulk of the series with its main penultimate game here, and it's... We're gonna probably dive into a little bit of the future, just in reference form, but yeah, we're keeping this one to the originals.
Yep, and folks, we have made all of the right choices in the conversation in the very beginning, so we'll be leveling up nice and fast.
Yes, you gotta choose that sword, drop that shield, you don't need it.
Yep, drop the shield?
Oh, drop that shield.
I dropped the ball. Okay, so Kingdom Hearts. We'll get to dropping the sword and the shield. Brief story overview is this is a multiverse with many different worlds, of which are all being attacked by these monsters of darkness called the Heartless. The only one that can defeat the Heartless is the Keyblade Master, a young boy named Sora. All the worlds in this multiverse happen to be worlds that are Disney movies. And so we see the marriage that I never even fathomed as a kid could possibly happen, that being Disney and Final Fantasy. And folks, if you know me, then this was like, I was literally like, did they go in my head? Did I dream this?
Did something end up actually manifesting from a dream that I had? Because this is exactly what we all had hoped for. Yeah. The biggest mashup that we could possibly imagine.
I was in high school, and I was flipping through the channels, and I land on this video game commercial. And it looks cool, you know, it's got some cool music. And I'm looking, and I'm like, oh, is that Cloud? Oh, that's Cloud! Is that Donald Duck?
Donald and Goofy. What?
What? And then I, you know, I did some digging. I went online. I typed in Disney Final Fantasy, and boom, Kingdom Hearts came right up. And I was working on Blockbuster Video at the time, and I was so psyched for, I know, what a foreign concept.
Way to date yourself there.
Yeah. I was so excited for us to get that first copy of Kingdom Hearts.
I bet you that copy never actually saw a customer's hands either.
Unfortunately, it had to. I flew out and bought it right away. I mean, I had to. I still remember like getting that game. I was probably never more excited to get a game than Kingdom Hearts, except for Kingdom Hearts 2.
Right.
I still remember that commercial actually when it came out.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, that's a game I'd really like to play. I love Disney, and you know, I recognize those characters from Final Fantasy.
Right.
And you know, I was really excited about it. Simple and Clean was in it, right?
Yes, Simple and Clean was
the song
was
that
there,
was in the background.
That's their classic main song.
Yeah, I just remember hearing the lyrics too, and I was like, ooh, I'm really attracted to this. I need to get this game.
That's a great song.
Yeah,
It is. They really, you know, did really good marketing for that game.
Well, yeah, you know, the song is much cooler in Japanese when you can't understand the words, because, again, it's a Japanese song, so when it's translated in English, it makes no sense.
No sense whatsoever. Well, it doesn't rhyme even a little bit, but whatever. It's still a great, great song.
So basically, Disney Interactive and Squaresoft at the time, now Square Enix, both came together and decided they were going to put a game out together. Now, I think the fear of a lot of people was like, oh, we're going to see Sephiroth and Winnie the Pooh together. But, you know, you don't. There is a place for more kid-friendly stuff like 100 Acre Wood.
Right.
But then you have these moments of just pure nonstop Very adult-friendly awesomeness.
Like the Hades Cup in Olympus, for instance.
Yes, oh my god, mind-numbingly difficult. when you fight Squall and Cloud at the same time.
Yeah, that was interesting. Didn't ever expect to see that.
It was also the first time we got to see Final Fantasy characters from different games interacting
exactly.
with each other.
Different now, worlds, yeah. different areas, all of a sudden together.
I mean, now we have Dissidia, which for the PSP, which, god, that needs to come out for our console.
Absolutely.
Because Dissidia is an amazing fighting game where you could pit characters from Final Fantasy games against each other. But this was the first time we had ever seen, let's say, you know, like Yuffie and Squall in the same place at the same time. And then, you know, eventually in Kingdom Hearts 2, we got to see what everybody wanted, which was Cloud and Squall in the same place.
Exactly. I know I did, definitely. I mean, those two are like my favorite Final Fantasy games right there. I know a lot of people say FF8 sucks compared to FF7, but I say no. FF8 is great.
FF8's
a
really good game. I think.
So he's emo. I like emo,
yeah,
maybe.
I think
I don't
where
know.
That game had its downfall yes, it was exactly. the weird card-based battle system. Collecting your cards to increase your powers and things like that. I don't think a lot of people attach to that, but you're absolutely right.
I don't think
FF8
I ever
was
did
amazing.
That.
Well, you had
that
to. It was the Junction system.
Oh, the GX.
Yeah.
I didn't like that.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little goofy, a little wonky, but, you know.
I dug it. It was different going from FF7, but then once you just acclimate to it, it's second nature.
Now, let's talk about the Final Fantasy characters in Kingdom Hearts. Now, we have Cloud.
Mm-hmm.
We have Yuffie.
Right.
We have Aerith, or as she's referred to in the game, Aerith.
Yes.
That's not me talking with a lisp. That is the right way to say the name. Mm-hmm. We have Cid.
Cid, of course.
We have Moogles.
Right.
Yay,
all
Moogles.
All over the place. And we have Squall, who is kind of the main one. But, of course, Squall.
Technically, Leon.
Leon.
But
yeah, get it right.
She does call. Yuffie calls him Squall
right.
in the beginning. So his name was Squall, and he changed it to Leon.
It's
I never
Leon.
Understood it.
Yeah.
David Boreanaz voicing him, which could not have been a better
That's
choice.
Such a great pick.
That is a very good point. I did not know that one. I thought
And Mandy
familiar.
Moore is Aerith, isn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, Mandy yes. Moore was Aerith.
You could just Aerith. Pick out that sweet voice.
Yeah, Haley
anywhere.
Joel Osment as your
Sora.
Lead character, mm-hmm. Sora. Believe it or not, the cheerleader from Heroes. Can't think of her name.
Hayden Panettiere
was Kyrie.
Yep.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, ooh. And and again, the name's escaping me, but the kid from Seventh Heaven was Riku.
Yeah, it's also escaping
the
me.
Youngest kid?
Yeah, I can't think of his name, but yeah, the youngest kid from Seventh
and,
Heaven.
You know, they've
so basically, long story short, star-studded voiceover cast.
Very, very, very. And you got the majority of the Disney performers to come back and voice their characters.
Yes.
Ariel was Ariel.
Most
of
them.
You know,
yeah. Hercules wasn't, though.
Hercules wasn't, yeah.
What
Hercules
the hell?
Wasn't. Sebastian didn't quite make it.
No, the actor passed away.
Right.
Yeah,
but with Hercules...
That.
The guy that played Hercules actually came back
in two.
In the second
in
one?
In two, yes. But Aladdin was voiced by, was it Steve from Full House?
Steve from
Aladdin?
Full House, yeah.
Yep, Steve was...
That's not the guy that voices him
that
in
was
the
Aladdin.
Animated series,
yeah,
though?
That's correct.
No, it
is.
Well,
in everything.
In everything. He's not a big enough star where he's going to be turning down work.
No offense. Maybe a little offense.
Yeah, but what about the Hercules guy? I don't even know who he is.
Well,
he apparently
came in for two.
He noticed he did something wrong.
You know,
that's right.
You had the bootleg genie voice because Robin Williams wasn't doing this.
Yeah, there's no way they're getting Robin Williams for that. Yeah. Who else was? Who else did we have?
Well, you had all the voices of the villains. Ursula was Ursula.
Right.
Right. Jafar was Jafar.
Well, the modern day Maleficent.
Yeah.
Because that actress that voiced her in Sleeping Beauty is long since dead.
Right.
Jafar was Jafar. Oogie was Oogie.
Right.
You know, Hook again, the current Hook that they have do everything.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Everything from, you know, Jake and the Neverland Pirates to stuff in the parks. So really, you know, phenomenal cast, and it did really, really well with a lot of different demographics. It's a game that can be friendly for kids who the story will kind of go over their heads. A
little bit.
I mean, I know a lot of adults who this story goes over their heads.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But to the credit of that, the story does kind of boil down to... you know, boy wants to rescue his friends.
Right.
And if that's all you need to look into it, sure, good enough. You know, that's basically it. One boy's going out, helping out a bunch of other people. You know,
and the concept
saving
of
the world.
The concept of being the chosen one.
Right.
The keyblade, the key bearer, the keyblade wielder. The one boy in all the world who can wield this magical keyblade, or so we thought in the beginning.
So we thought.
you know, it turns out that there are thousands of keyblades that can choose a master. This particular Keyblade just happened to, you know, we're not going to get into the sequels here, folks. We're just going to be talking about the first game, but you do find out that Sora's Keyblade is special. in a later game, which is a prequel game, Birth by Sleep. Kingdom Hearts, the first Kingdom Hearts, it is the first game chronologically that to come out. However, it is the second game in the series.
Second game in the chronological order.
Yes, second game in the timeline of the series, but the first one to physically release here.
Right.
That first one being Birth by Sleep, which is a prequel story. Again, we'll get there eventually.
Yes.
So let's talk villains in this, because right away, we see the Heartless right off the bat.
Right.
And when we reach the Land of Departure, which is that first area where you're on, like, the stained glass columns for the princesses. Actually, before we get to that, let's discuss the Land of Departure a little bit. It's very, the beginning of the game is very surreal.
Yeah, it's
trippy.
Yeah, it's very, very confusing. You know, you're disoriented. You don't quite know what's happening. You don't know what's real, what's not. And that's basically a theme that kind of progresses through the whole story. You're not quite sure what's really happening, what's not.
Right. The first words we hear Sora say, "I'm having these weird thoughts lately. Like, is any of this for real or not?"
Right.
And that is definitely a major theme throughout the game. And then we get to the Land of Departure, which is, you know, Sora doesn't speak there. He's being spoken to about how you are the one that will open the door, yada, yada, yada. So now we have a choice. You have to choose a power. You are presented with a sword, a wand, and a shield.
Right.
What do you take?
Personally, I chose, and it just based on personal preference, I would love to have chosen the wand. But, you know, based on going through a few playthroughs, I've tend to find it's a little more fun to play with the sword instead of the wand.
Yeah, Sora's more of a hack and slash.
Sora's more of a hack and slash.
Magic system is kind of labored.
It is. It's a little difficult. You know, things are a little confusing. But it's basic, but it's enough to get you going.
Is it just in the beginning too? But he seems to run out of his MP kind of quickly.
He does. He absolutely does.
Yeah,
and that's where choosing the sword is beneficial, because you still have Donald as your primary magic user, and you know you're not really gonna really be affected by Sora not being great in magic.
You know, Goofy's your defender, Donald is your mage, Sora is your warrior.
I mean,
the sword is, I feel like to pick any of the other ones make for your party to be a little unbalanced.
Right, it's the basic trinity. It's the, you know, it's the tank, you know, hack and slasher, it's the damage dealing, you know, magic wielder, and your
defender.
And
Goofy's always a defender,
right.
Donald is always the mage,
and you know what?
The warrior.
I feel like the defender and the mage are such perfect personalities for Goofy and Donald.
Yes,
because Goofy is nice beyond nice, and he wouldn't want to hit anybody.
Yeah.
He would want to just block you with his shield and push you away from him.
Exactly, which is what most of his abilities end up doing. Push you away from him towards Sora.
Yeah.
Right, and Donald will lose his shit no matter what.
Exactly, Donald, so Donald is just balls out.
Donald has
explosions coming out from him are just perfect.
Donald has Comet written all over.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That was tough, though. When I played it with Kevin watching, I walked over to the wand, and he was like, "Don't you dare!"
What are you doing?
He stopped me.
It looks so cool. It's got a
mid gate. I was like, "Are you kidding? Come on! I'd like to give it a shot. I really did, because I like magic.
Yeah,
I
all intents purposes, it doesn't change too much. It just changes what abilities end up getting earlier. You know, it kind of reshuffles your ability list. You miss out on some of the I guess, the limit break abilities that he would get, you know, like Ars Arcanum or, you know, Ragnarok. You wouldn't end up getting those if you chose not as early as you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You end up getting them later. Whereas if you choose the mage, you actually get one ability very early, which is the treasure hunter ability. The treasure magnet. Yeah, the one that draws in orbs quicker, so you can end up collecting things a lot faster, not having to backtrack and go and pick up old orbs that you may have missed.
Right.
So there are benefits to going both ways. I tend to prefer the ability, the real hack and slash abilities of the
right.
It is more effective. Yeah, definitely. But if you go for the wand, does that mean someone else in the party is given the sword, or how does that work?
Nope. The other two remain exactly the same.
Nothing changes. Donald and Goofy.
I see.
You know, then you take the sword, let's say, or you take whatever. Then you are presented with the other two, and it's like now you have to give one up.
Yeah, and this is
where we differ.
An interesting choice, because you know this doesn't happen often. Where you know the very second thing that happens in a game, you have to limit yourself.
Yeah,
and it's kind of indicative of the overall theme of the game, where you know. I guess Sora isn't really complete. You know, he is a shadow of himself eventually. You know, eventually he does end up turning into a shadow of himself for a brief moment. But yeah, it's a really cool little feature there that you can, if you're a fan of the genre, if you've played a lot of these games, you may as well, you know, go ahead and give up the shield because you're good enough without it. You know, you may not, you may want to go for a little extra ability there. Or if you give up the mage, then you have a little bit extra defense on you so that you can kind of withstand some of the tougher fights.
Yeah, I always give up the wand. Because I feel like with magic, the only thing I'm ever using magic for is a healing spell.
Right.
I feel like as a warrior, if you're going to be up there on the front lines hacking and slashing, you need that defense.
That makes sense. Yeah, as you're saying, on my most recent playthrough, I gave up the shield. So I chose the sword, gave up the shield. I honestly, in the heat of battle, never bothered with magic unless I had to. Unless it was, you know, like a magic weak enemy, something like that.
Occasionally, with like the large bodies, I'll hit them with a fire spell just because I hate having to run around them.
Yeah, it gets a little tedious until you get dodge roll. Once you dodge roll around them, it's a lot easier. You just kind of go right up to them, pow, right behind them, and hack
away.
So
if you give up the wand, what happens to the magic when you're using it in the
game? You just become a little less powerful.
Yeah, your magic's just not as effective.
Yeah, you still get everything exactly at the same times. So, you know, you acquire all your spells still. You don't miss anything. It's just not as effective.
And I find that I instinctually just use magic sometimes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work in my favor because I will have already selected the shield.
Right.
So, you know, it's not quite as effective as it normally would be.
Yeah.
But I think it's just because I think of Final Fantasy characters in the game and I always think attack and magic too.
Right, exactly.
It just goes together.
Yeah. Okay, so Land of Departure, we learn how to pick up barrels and smash things and fight and walk
all
through
doors. All the important stuff.
You know, how to move. So then we meet our villains. We meet the Heartless right out of the bat. We don't know who they are yet.
Right.
And these are pure blood Heartless that you fight in the beginning. Those little shadows with the antennae, they are what's called purebred Heartless. They are just like, they are the Heartless that are born from people just losing their hearts.
Right.
The ones with the emblems on their chest, those are actually artificially created Heartless, created by Ansem.
The ones with the robes? The ones with the robes?
Robes.
What about the Heartless that appear?
Oh, those aren't Heartless.
Those aren't actually Heartless.
Those are the nobodies.
Yeah, those are nobodies. That's in Kingdom Hearts 2. Yes. You don't see any of them in Kingdom Hearts 1.
Well, you do.
Briefly.
You
briefly.
Do. So, you see Xemnas in the final mix. You fight Xemnas.
Right.
Briefly.
Okay, disclaimer here. I haven't played all the Kingdom Hearts games.
Just
the first one and a long time ago.
Yeah.
I was just trying to do a refresher
We played 1 and 2 together.
I barely remember the second one.
Well,
though.
It was 7 years ago. It was when we first started dating. It was the very first game we ever played together.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's exactly why I barely remember any of this stuff. So, but you don't find out about the nobodies until 2. So what are you thinking that they are at this point?
When you run into Xemnas, you have no idea what he is.
Yeah, you have no idea. He's actually what is listed as unknown.
Unknown, yeah.
Unknown. He's not even named in Jiminy's journal. He's just unknown.
Unknown.
Because you see him, and he clearly knows you. He knows
exactly
about
who you are.
And, but you have no idea about him. And there's
he's a
big
beast.
Reason for that.
He's a beast in this game.
He is. He is. He's quite difficult. He's a very, very tough optional fight.
Yeah.
That's the only time you would have ever seen him in the first game. So you don't technically, I mean, you don't know who nobodies are, but you've never seen them either.
Right.
So, yeah.
But you know they're these guys in these black hooded robes that are kicking around.
Right.
You do encounter them. I don't know if you... Do you find out what the nobodies are in Chain of Memories? I don't remember. It's been a long time.
You do. No, you don't, actually.
But they talk about the organization.
They talk about the organization, but you don't actually find out what they are.
Right. Chronologically, in the Kingdom Hearts game timeline, the first game where you would discover what the nobodies are is 352 over 8 days.
Chronologically, yeah.
What are the numbers there? The box is right there.
Which
I was
358 over 2 days.
358 over 2 days. Yeah,
yeah. It's very indicative as to what happens technically right in Kingdom Hearts 2.
Yeah, yeah. It's a prequel to 2, basically.
Right.
You're getting Roxas.
Yeah. 358 over 2 days, or other known as days. Some people just call it days to make it easier. It's that bridge between Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2. It is a direct sequel, but it didn't come out for a console, so it was.
Yeah.
It's something that they sort of. I guess they just kind of made as a labor of love, and it fits directly into the storyline.
It's a lot of fan service.
Yeah, it is a lot of fan service.
I will say that we don't learn anything new in 358 over 2 days.
Right, and then everything that we learn is swiftly forgotten. So,
well, that's the chain of memories, where everything we learn is forgotten.
Oh, right.
Okay, but back to Kingdom Hearts 1. We said we weren't going to talk about the sequels. Talking about the sequels. So the Heartless. Cool villains, definitely. They are born when somebody loses their heart. The darkness in that heart that was taken turns into a Heartless. So then when the Heartless is created, it's just a monster born of darkness. Meanwhile, your body vanishes and becomes what's called a nobody. The lesser nobodies are just white creatures. Like, if the Heartless are black, the
overall, I think they call them white. Husks.
Husks,
in general.
Husks and shadows.
There's a different type. Yeah, all sorts of different types of nobodies.
Somebody with a supremely strong heart would become a stronger Heartless, much like Ansem. Or they would become like what the organization members are. Where they maintain their self, their sense of self. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing about the organization, I'll get off the organization in a second, but it's you take your original name, you switch the letters around, and you add an X.
Yeah, it's not something that's very well explained, but it's something that you catch.
In Days, it's explained.
In Days, right.
Because you see, Xemnas, when he finds Roxas, he puts up, the letters of Sora.
Yeah.
And he rearranges the letters and puts an X in the middle, and it's Roxas.
Right. Every Organization 13 member
has
an X in their name.
Xemnas is Ansem with the X.
Oh, okay. And Xehanort is...
Xehanort is actually No Heart.
Yeah.
Mixed around with the X.
Right.
But that's his actual name. Xehanort is his name. It's not
Xehanort
that's the original person's name.
Right.
Okay.
And you find out all about Xehanort's origins and birth by sleep.
So he just happened to have an X in his name?
Yeah. I think that's why they all have an X in their
name. Right. Because he is the leader of this whole organization.
Oh, okay.
I see. Axel's original name was Lee. Syax was Issa.
Did you hear that? His original name is Lee. Got it memorized?
Yeah. Got it memorized. Okay, so the Heartless are one thing. Then, right after, I believe it's when we get out of Traverse Town, we see the halls of Hollow Bastion, which these shadowy figures around a table watching Sora, Donald, and Goofy. And they are the Disney villains.
Yes.
And they are all together, and it's awesome.
It is one of the coolest scenes. You've got Hades, you've got Maleficent, you've got...
Well, let's go around the table. There's Hades, mm-hmm.
Jafar,
Ursula... Oogie, Hook. I think that's it for around the table.
Yeah, around the table. That's it. And they're all being
and then Maleficent walks into the light.
Yeah,
And I love that because typically, traditionally, when a group of Disney villains gather, they are led by one of two people: either Maleficent or the Evil Queen. The Evil Queen, because she's the first Disney villain, but Maleficent is just so awesome, and I really feel as though an argument can be made that she's the main villain of this game.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Because she is for the majority of it, until Ansem springs up right at the end. But Maleficent is just the constant thorn in your side, and one of the most difficult boss fights in the entire game, when she's a dragon.
When she's a dragon, yes.
Yeah, the first one's easy.
Yeah.
But the Disney villains all being together and be collecting the princesses of heart to open up the final door. It's such a cool concept to me.
It is. It's very Disney. Mm-hmm. It's very grand in scope.
Well, because they found a way, Disney has certain things. The villains, the Disney villains are a brand. The Disney princesses are a brand. They brilliantly found a way to incorporate both of these brands into this game.
But not all princesses were technically classified as princesses of heart, right? Because, as you said, Ariel, even though she's a princess of Atlantica, is not a princess of heart.
There are... the Disney princesses are... Let's see if I can name these. Cinderella, Snow White, Belle, Jasmine, Ariel, Aurora... then you have Mulan, Pocahontas, Merida, and Rapunzel. I'm probably forgetting one. Of those, the princesses of heart are Cinderella, Snow White, Aurora, Alice, who is not actually a Disney princess.
That was a surprise for me. When you told me.
That.
Really?
Yeah.
Belle.
Alice, Belle, Jasmine.
And Kyrie.
That was the big switcheroo, is that Kyrie is a Disney princess, because she was the princess in Hollow Bastion.
She isn't a Disney princess. She's a princess of heart.
Yes, she's one of the seven. And so you gather the seven princesses of heart, and together, utilizing the power of their pure hearts, you can open up the final door to darkness, which leads you to the world that never was, which is the Heartless World.
How come there were some princesses that weren't considered in that group?
They're just not chosen.
What's not?
They just weren't chosen for...
Ariel. At the end of the day, they wanted Ariel to be more of a heroine in this game, I feel, and not like a damsel in distress who gets kidnapped. Because Ariel fights alongside you. And that's one of the other cool things I love in this game.
I do dig that.
Like, when you go to these different worlds, I mean, like, I wish that you could have had a four-person party, because I don't like subbing out Donald or Goofy.
Yeah, I don't like subbing anybody out, but it is nice.
Then you miss out on Trinities and things like that.
Exactly, yeah. Whatever world that you're in, you get a companion from said world.
You know, most of them. Like, you don't get one in Wonderland.
You get Tarzan. You get, Ariel. You get Aladdin.
Jack Skellington. Peter Pan.
Right. Yeah, all these people helping you, you know, guiding you through their world.
Yes.
Well, when you're fighting in Atlantica and you choose, Ariel joins your party, right? Temporarily.
Yep,
correct.
You choose one of the other two to just dismiss.
Yep. The party stays at three people. Yeah. So you have to choose whether you want to give up Donald or Goofy.
Ugh, and I hate it, but I usually get rid of Goofy.
Yeah, me too. I usually do, because he's...
I need Donald's magic.
You need that squawk.
Especially in Atlantica, there's no doubt about it. You need Donald's magic, because travel is so difficult in Atlantica that, you know, up close to, you know, hand-to-hand combat isn't all that great. Plus, mostly all of the enemies in that world are weak to magic anyway.
Well, yeah, you know, on a second playthrough, I feel like you can get more of a feel for Atlantica, because basically the swimming controls are the same as the flying controls in Neverland.
Yes. Yeah, so, essentially, exactly.
Yeah, at the end of the day, when you're in Neverland at the very end around the clock tower, you're going to play around, you're going to fly all over the place, you're going to get a handle on that flying system really quickly, and then you have to fly again in the final, in the world that never was.
Right.
In the final boss fight. So you know what you're doing at that point, and then Atlantica becomes a lot easier. I do love, and Jackie pointed out, she called Donald a squawk. And that's because when you go to certain worlds, they transform. And like Sora becomes a merman, like a shark merman.
Right.
Donald becomes a squid duck, which Jackie has dubbed a squawk.
Mm-hmm.
And Goofy becomes a dog turtle, which Jackie dubbed a
dirtle.
A dirtle. Okay. Yeah.
And then
very affectionately.
Yes, and then in two there's a Darrett and a Dordis.
A Darrett and a door. Oh, in what's that? Pride
in
Rock.
In Pride Rock. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And don't forget, in Halloween Town, we have Goofy and Donald. Donald turns into a mummy,
and Goofy is like a Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And Sora's a vampire.
Right.
I do enjoy that, where you get like a different look for these different areas.
It is pretty cool, and that's something I hope that they kind of go forward with in Kingdom Hearts 3. Is you know, changing your look.
Well, they do.
You have to assimilate a little bit.
They do it in two.
Right. Yeah, you know, they do it in two with all the drive forms and all that kind of...
Yeah, but they also do it when you go to Pride Rock. Simba's a little lion cub and, you know...
So cute.
Yeah, it's really cool.
That's adorable with little spiky hair.
Yeah.
You know what it is. Whipping
around that Keyblade with his teeth.
Yes!
You know, one thing, the story of Kingdom Hearts, we mentioned it before, it is kind of complicated.
Yes.
I think the thing a lot of people don't understand right off the bat is, like, the question I get asked a lot is, why was Riku able to pull the Keyblade away from Sora?
Right.
Halabastion.
Right.
And the answer to that is not an answer that I like. It's that Riku, at the time, was supposed to be the Keyblade Master. The Keyblade was coming to Riku in the beginning of the game, but Riku was already gone. So it took Sora until Sora was in a position where Riku could take the Keyblade from him.
Now, is that confirmed, or is this theory?
No, I've seen it in more than enough. Riku even says it in the game.
So the Keyblade settled on Sora?
Yeah.
Really?
Basically, yeah.
The unsung hero.
You find out in Birth by Sleep that Sora is special because he's connected to Ventus, who was another Keyblade master. But you know, that's why the Keyblade was able to go to him. But it was looking for Riku because Riku was supposed to be the chosen Keyblade master. But then Riku has steeped himself in such darkness, and Sora has proven how strong his heart is. So the Keyblade then chooses Sora.
Right. Wasn't first choice, but it was the right choice eventually.
Right. The Keyblade messed up, basically.
Right.
And it
worked out.
Which is basically all on Riku for allowing too much darkness in and ending up switching over to that
Riku
side.
Riku is your typical redemption story, and I think it's a great one.
Absolutely.
You know, because throughout the entire game, we see Riku being manipulated Anakin Skywalker style by Maleficent.
Yeah.
And Final Mix has actually done a great job of... And by the way, Final Mix, Japan has had Final Mix for like 10 years.
Right.
We just got it this year. And you know, you have that extra scene where Riku appears in Halabastion, and you see Maleficent like looking down at him and stuff like that, and then you see like, oh, silly boy, you're like a son to me, and like there's those things that she just very subtly, you could tell he doesn't trust her, Yeah. Because like when he smacked me, he's like, I certainly doubt that or something like that. But Riku is tempted by the darkness. And that's why Sora, it's almost like Sora, it's like having the angel and the devil on each shoulder, because he has Kairi, which is reminiscent of light, and Riku, which is reminiscent of darkness.
Yes.
So it's like Sora walks the line. There's a lot of symbolism in these games
there
that
is.
I love so much. Like that right there, that Trinity, that is, and Terra, Ventus, and Aqua, the original Keyblade Masters, the same thing. Ventus is kind of torn between Terra, who is more of the darkness, and Aqua, who is the light. And, you know, you'll see that when you play that game.
Right.
I wonder what those people's abilities are, given those names.
Yes.
Not very clear.
No, they are all air, wind, earth, and water.
Sounds like lightning.
Nah.
Is this lightning?
Yeah.
Maybe?
Hmm?
I don't know.
Yes. Best Disney villain boss fight. What? Or, you know what? Let's even say more broad thing. What are the worlds we love, and what are the worlds we hate?
Yeah, this is a very interesting question, because as we were, you know, pre-gaming for this, we kind of had a little pre-discussion on going back to Kingdom Hearts, going through almost every world, saying, oh, God, I hate this world. I hate this world. Oh, Atlantica, oh, great. Got to swim again. Oh, Halloween Town. Oh, it stinks. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it really kind of, I think that's just because we know the end game, and we know, you know, where it's all heading, and we just want to get there.
Right.
My least favorite has to be Atlantica, just because.
Really?
Yeah, just because I'm not a fan of the whole swimming thing, and it's just it's a bother. You know, I'd rather just keep going the way that the game is progressing originally. You know, and you know, on foot.
My least favorite world in the entire game is Wonderland.
Mm-hmm.
Really, I thought it was Monstro.
I hate Monstro too.
Monstro's
a close second.
Yeah.
But Wonderland is Monstro's at least linear. I can get through Monstro.
Right.
Some important story things happen in Monstro, like with Riku kidnapping Pinocchio and stuff like that. But
yes,
with Monstro in Wonderland, I'm just like, oh my god, screw this.
Yeah, it was a little underwhelming being in Wonderland. They could have done a lot more with it that they didn't do. I'll agree with you that it wasn't one of my favorite.
I bet the puzzles annoyed you more than
it
anything,
did.
Right?
The puzzles annoyed me, and you know, the
having to grow and then shrink, and
yeah,
then grow
and then
the
boss
shrink.
And the mm-hmm. boss fight was a pain in the butt. It wasn't even like a Disney villain boss fight.
Which
so.
Villain? The trap door to free what's her face?
Alice.
No,
not that. I'm talking about that last Heartless that you fight there.
Oh,
when you find
the
room
with the
potions.
Right.
Yeah, like that. That's a pain in the butt. Wonderland, top to bottom, it was just a horrid, horrid, horrid level. And it's like the first world you go to outside of Traverse Town, so you're like,
ugh. It's like, ugh, gross.
Let's go world by world. Deep Jungle. How do we feel about Deep Jungle?
Torn. I'm torn. I liked it. I liked the enemies that we had there, especially in the final mix. There was a little interesting optional boss there, two actual optional bosses there that were pretty cool with different mechanics that really kind of mess with things. One of them being basically the standard, mage Heartless that you came across. The fire ones, the blizzard ones, all those. There was one that looked just like them, but he was purple. You come across him, and he splits into five. And then basically it plays a game of, you know, follow the leader here, where you just have to follow him around and make sure you swipe at the right one. If you do, cool. If not, you get zapped. Mm. Interesting little, you know, different way to do things. I like the world in general. I don't like the vines. I don't like swinging on the vines. I don't like the tunnel sliding game where you had to, you know, eventually get to the camp. That was just a little shoehorned in.
On every television show, you have episodes that are integral to the plot.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have those episodes that are just filler. They're
there
to fill time. Deep Jungle is there to fill time.
Exactly. There was no story development whatsoever.
Yeah, it's a very roundabout way to say, oh, we should keep our friends in our hearts.
Right.
Like, you know, the entire time Sora thinks Riku and Kairi are there because Tarzan keeps saying, friends, ooh, hee, ha, ha, ha.
Right.
And it just means heart.
Yeah.
And it's like, at the end of it, I feel like Sora should look at him and be like, really?
Yeah.
But he just says, oh.
How profound of
you.
Thank you for wasting our time.
Thank you, man-beast, for nothing.
Yeah. Frickin' savage. Yeah. And just storm away. I mean, you know, you do have the whole thing with Sora and Donald kind of being at each other's throats in that level. And but you know, we get Minnie Driver in there.
We do love her.
Yes, we do.
We do love Minnie Driver.
God love Minnie Jane.
Any British accent, really, but yeah, Minnie Driver.
Sure. She's got such a distinct British accent, though. Yes. I love Minnie Driver.
It's like an angry British woman.
So yeah, that about does it for Deep Jungle.
Yeah, the Coliseum.
Coliseum, I loved.
I love the Coliseum,
and it's funny because it was two screens large.
Yes, that's the most simplistic world.
Two screens, but three. There was technically three. Yeah, if you count the battle arena as one, which you should because it's the main feature there.
Okay, and Coliseum, it's where we first meet Cloud.
Right, where we first meet Cloud.
I thought the concept of Cloud working for Hades was very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he made a deal to find, and everyone thought he was looking for Eris, but it turned out he was looking for Sephiroth.
Right, right. Which gets even more developed later on when you know they kind of go off on their little tangent between them two, which makes perfect sense.
Yep, and it's followed through into Kingdom Hearts 2 as well. It's just an overarching story that Cloud and Sephiroth are just constantly at each other's throats.
Right, one being the light, one being the darkness in that light. And it just stays true to the theme of the game and stays true to the theme of their relationship in general.
Absolutely. So the Colosseum, I mean, we fight some pretty cool bosses in the Colosseum. Cerberus, who the first time I played, I was stuck on Cerberus forever.
Oh, Cerberus was such a pain.
Now, but you know what's weird? Like, Wonderland is a battle level 1 world. The Colosseum's 2.
Yeah. And Deep Jungle is 3.
Yes.
I find it's easier to go Wonderland, Deep Jungle, than the Colosseum.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you need to level up in Deep Jungle in order to beat Cerberus.
Right. There's really not much in Deep Jungle that's very
difficult.
You also
get a new Keyblade.
Yes. Right? You can get the Deep Jungle Keyblade.
And that's a good one, too, because it's got a really long reach. So you can actually, which is clutch with Cerberus, because you don't want to be too close.
Right, right. And Cerberus, like, he's got that one attack where he spews the dark energy into the ground. You have to dodge roll out
of
the
way. You just have to kind of dodge roll a thousand times in a row.
I made the mistake of just looking at the stars and going, okay, well, it makes sense to go to star level 2 first, right?
Sure.
Nope, it did not work
in
my
favor. First
time
I played the game, that's what I did, too. Yeah. And then I got to Cerberus, couldn't beat him, left the world, went and did Deep Jungle, came back, and then just owned Cerberus.
Yep. Oh yeah. It was definitely vital.
Lost to Cloud, in the first.
Yeah.
The concept of Cloud fighting Hercules is pretty cool too.
That was pretty cool.
I thought like
there was Cloud, a lot. There was Cloud a lot.
Cloud
would have
whooped him.
Yeah. We'll see. Maybe that depends. I'd like to think that he would, but I don't know.
Did you know Cloud looked a little bit like Vincent in this game?
A little bit. He was a lot darker. Than he probably could have been.
They gave him the red cloak. Like
he did, a tattered cloak.
One thing that was kind of interesting was that the positioning of his cloak was on the opposite side of Sephiroth's one wing, and I thought that was a really cool little nod
when you
two halves of a whole.
When you fight Cloud, he does an attack where he flies through the air and follows you, and he gets a demon wing on the other side, the opposite side where Sephiroth's angel wing is.
Right. Right. Yeah, there's a lot of really cool kind of just nods to the series.
He also has a little takeoff of Vincent's claw hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah, he does.
And
gauntlet.
The fact that it
kind of makes sense because Vincent wasn't in the game. Maybe they just kind of wanted to find a way to
bring
put him in there in spirit.
In there, right? Yeah.
The fact that the Buster Sword was like wrapped in bandages.
Yeah, that was really cool.
I've never really figured out why.
Yeah, no idea why.
Injured.
Yeah, I used to toy with the idea of like, oh, it'd be cool fanfic if you told like the story of the Final Fantasy characters like before Hollow Bastion fell and like, Sephiroth shatters the Buster Sword or something like that. Something really cool like that. I just thought it would be interesting to see like where Sephiroth fits in the Hollow Bastion mythos.
Yeah.
Like, because he looks enough like Xehanort and Ansem.
Right, where he could be a nobody.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, or like there could be some kind of relation there.
Yeah.
Like as a son or something like that.
Right, right. I wouldn't be surprised to see if they try to pull off Sephiroth as Cloud's nobody.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, they could technically go wherever
they want.
They
technically could, yeah. All right, so moving on. Okay, well then let's keep. You fight Cloud, you fight Cerberus, you fight Hercules.
Fight Hercules, yeah.
Which is a cool boss fight.
At this point, that's basically it.
You keep the Hades
coming
Cup.
Back. Yeah, you keep coming back.
You fight Hades.
Yeah, you fight Hades. You fight the rock and the Ice Titan. Yeah. Well, Ice Titan's optional. But yeah, you fight him.
And then you have the baddest Mamma Jamma in the entire game, which is Sephiroth.
Yeah,
Literally can kill you in two swipes of his sword.
Yep, and game's been out for over a decade, and I have one time beaten it in my life, and that was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, years ago I beat him one time.
Yeah, he was difficult.
It's pretty. Sephiroth also has an attack that can drain your health to one
yes.
HP.
Oh yeah, if you don't either run up there and bust him up, or you have to have an elixir basically immediately ready, because not only does he drain you to one HP, but zero MP, so you can't even use a cure right
nope,
after.
Nope. He drains you and charges.
Yeah.
One swipe and you're done.
It's almost like he knows what he's doing.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. He's smart.
Okay, so moving along in the worlds, I believe after the Colosseum comes Monstro.
Is it that early? I thought Monstro was a little bit later.
No, because you go to the Colosseum, you finish those three worlds, you go back to Traverse Town.
Right.
You lock the gate at Traverse Town, and then you go into Monstro.
I'm sure you remember, because you remember the impending dread, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Monstro is...
Oh, here we go. I mean, a couple good things about Monstro. Listen, at the end of the day, you are allowed to skip a world. You could skip either Monstro,
yes.
Atlantica, or Halloween Town.
Right.
You can skip one of the three. I used to skip Halloween Town, but now I don't. Monstro, you really can't skip Monstro, though, because there's important story things that happen in there, and you get the high jump ability.
Yes, the high jump ability is clutch. That's the only good thing to come out of Monstro.
Yep. So, you know, Monstro, I mean, it's a lot of tunnels, and oh my god, did I go through this tunnel? I gotta go through that tunnel. None of the tunnels match up. And am I the only that gets a little skeeved out where you walk through that door and it just says bowels?
Yeah, bowels, and then eventually you're traveling on the insides of a whale.
Yeah.
A
little, some intergalactic whale.
A little TMI for me. You know?
I mean, it was cool to have a world. If you're gonna do a world referencing Pinocchio, that's the world.
Right, exactly. It's either
you gotta have
or,
that experience
or an open
you
water.
Went through. Yeah.
And, you know, Geppetto is there, and you know, Figaro and the fish.
And the fish. I don't remember either.
So, you know, the whole cast of characters. You know, a lot of people don't realize that when you go back to Traverse Town, Geppetto's in Traverse Town.
Now. Yes, yeah, he has his own
and
house.
Pinocchio. He's got a shop there, I think.
Yeah, right across from the accessory shop, actually.
Yep. Yeah. He's competing with Sid. That's not going to go well for him.
No. But, to his credit, he basically works with most of the gummy ship designs.
Yeah,
it's a little
You
kind
actually
of
designed your own gummy ship, didn't
I
you?
Did. Sort of. I kind of played off of a couple. I looked a little bit online and saw a few things.
I had a friend back in the day who actually made their gummy ship look like Darkwing Duck's plane.
Nice. Yeah, I thought one pretty cool thing was that that they kind of almost all of the gummy ship blueprints that you got were nods to previous Final Fantasy enemies. Like you could get a blueprint of an Aramon or of the bombs, let's say. All sorts of different, you know, Final Fantasy enemies that are classics in the series. You could make a gummy ship that looks like them. They won't be very effective, but you can do it and it's fun. That's really the only kind of fun thing to come out of gummy ships.
Moving on to Jackie's favorite world, Atlantica.
Oh, Jackie's favorite world.
I think that's just because I love Little Mermaid. That's pretty much it.
I remember when we first played, we got to Atlantica, she was so excited.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, the one thing I will say about Atlantica, and I will say this about Halloween Town, too, they needed a second bit of background music, because playing This Is Halloween or playing Under the Sea over
it gets a
and
bit
over
monotonous.
And,
Yeah.
But, you know, once you got the hang of the swimming, I thought Atlantica was fine. It's actually one of my favorite worlds. Because I really enjoy the Ursula boss fight. At the first time I played it, I was like, oh my god, fuck this.
Right.
because she was just like, when you fight giant Ursula, it's just very, very difficult the first time.
Yeah. Yeah, she was a bit of a pain.
Oh, we missed one.
We did miss one. I was about to go back to that. Agrabah, we missed.
We missed Agrabah. I enjoy Agrabah.
Oh, right.
I love Agrabah. That was one of my favorite ones to go through.
Yeah, my favorite thing with Agrabah is the very first thing you see, that scene of Maleficent and Jafar just walking through the streets of Agrabah talking to each other. Yeah. Right, where, you know, Jafar...
The amount of power between those two is immense.
And I love how they're all like the definition of frenemies. They should all go into the business of pro wrestling because they do very well. because like they're walking around and Maleficent's, don't steep your heart in darkness too long until your concern is touching but hardly necessary.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's just like they're just total... like being jerks to each other. And right. She does it with Hades too in the Colosseum, where he's like, "What are you doing here? This is my show." She goes, "Oh,
get out of here! Yeah.
Fight to your heart's content." And he's like, mm-hmm. "He's like, yeah, okay. Wait a minute, because like he realizes that she just insinuated the Heartless are going to eat him alive." Mm-hmm. So yeah, Agrabah, pretty cool. I don't like the Cave of Wonders very much.
Cave of Wonders got a little bit much. It's just in that one area where if you fall off the ledge, Lord knows where you're going to end up.
Yeah.
And you have to backtrack, you know, back to where you were. Other than that, it was pretty cool. It introduced a lot of, you know, new Heartless. A lot of interesting.
Actually, those large bodies that can breathe fire.
A new large body, yeah. The fire-breathing large body, which was just a whole new level of annoyance.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was overall a really cool world there. And as far as helpers, Aladdin was one of the best that you could have. No. You know, he was very balanced.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's true.
He had a lot of really good abilities.
He had his Arabian sword, and here I come, and charged through.
It's good to have a hero like that as a sidekick.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. And then you get the genie summon from that.
Yes.
The summons are interesting because they're either people that you've encountered and that are like sticking with you, or they are people whose worlds were destroyed, like Simba or Mushu.
Or Bambi.
Or Bambi, yeah. Aww.
Bambi can't catch a break.
Bambi, his mother died, and his world is destroyed.
And now he's just going around in my pocket.
Yeah,
whenever I feel like using
exactly.
Him.
Drag him out. He'll drop some MP balls for you.
Yep.
By the way, Bambi, excellent summon to use when fighting Ursula.
Yes, absolutely.
So you were the one that said that.
Yes, definitely. So you can just keep wailing away. You throw up arrow, whatever you have at that point. Aroga or Aurora, one of the two, one of the three. But yeah, throw that up and summon Bambi, and that's a cakewalk. You just keep firing away.
Yep. Next world on the list would be Halloween Town. I know you didn't like this one very much.
Wasn't a fan, but again, I think it's just because of what you mentioned before. They could really use a little bit different music. Just got to be a little too...
That's the main issue you had with it then.
And there was a lot of... I feel like it may have just been me, you know, being annoyed with the world, but there was a lot more random enemy encounters there than on any other world. Especially once you get to the to the bridge that extends over into Oogie's Manor, you could not walk 2 feet without spawning a whole bunch of new Heartless.
Yep,
and the Heartless, it's just double annoyance then the music and that.
Yeah, exactly. And the Heartless there were like really tough too. I remember so
they were. Yeah, they were very difficult. You know, just every users. A lot of you know what it was those white knights that they had. They blocked a lot of attacks, so you had to kind of just keep hacking away until you eventually broke through.
Yeah.
Definitely being one of the more optional courses to go, you'd probably just skip that one. Especially if you're not even a fan of Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah, and that's why
I'm not, so.
Yeah, that's why I initially had skipped it. Now will do it, but I will do it post Neverland.
Okay.
Because when you have the glide ability, it's much easier to get around.
Yeah.
Because that whole second Oogie Boogie boss fight, he possesses his entire like mansion.
Right.
And so you're fighting a house and you have to like go on all the different ledges and destroy these like swirling masses of darkness. So much easier when you can glide.
Yeah.
So much easier because you could just glide to each one, you don't fall off one time.
Right.
Yeah, really, really easy. The Oogie Boogie on the roulette wheel is just kind of annoying.
Yeah, that one actually, it took me a while to figure out what I was supposed to actually do there.
Just got
to
follow
him. Yeah, and then once you did, and it was easy enough, but just tedious. Yeah, just kind of a little stretching out on that one.
Yeah. Moving on to Neverland.
I liked Neverland
a lot. I did
too.
I really enjoyed it. And just being able to fly.
Fly,
was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, being able to fly was really cool. And and you know what was really cool about that was how you see how excited Sora was to be able to fly. You know,
excited to be able to fly as Sora.
His reaction was completely mirrored by my own. Yeah. So it was really nice to see.
Yeah, you know, they play off Pan very well. You know, he's a bit of a douche.
Right. Yeah, kind of a little scumbag that one.
Yeah. You know, getting Wendy and getting out.
Yep.
I like the Hook boss fight.
Yeah, the Hook boss fight was a lot of fun.
Because you could fly during it too, which made it a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And did you ever do, if you hit Hook with fire magic?
Yes.
His pants catch on fire.
His pants catch on fire.
And he goes running around all over the place. It's hysterical. But if he runs into you, you take a lot of damage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you got to like hit him with the fire magic and then fly up into the air really quickly and watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. And anyone who has gone through the final mix knows that the optional Heartless, the new Heartless that was included into that one, one of the most annoying Heartless that you could ever come across. It was basically this giant, I don't know if you remember from Atlantica, those the jet streams they were called, where they it was a big bloated fish that carried three other fish underneath it.
Yep.
That makes a return as a flying Heartless, where anytime it touches you, it makes you drop about 1,000 money. So you had to avoid, and kill as quickly as possible, or else you were going to be broke. And that was that was awful. So after Neverland
was complete, perfect pirate monster.
Exactly. After Neverland was complete, going back to Neverland again, it's a chore. Good luck.
Okay, so you have that. And then, the other thing I love with Hook is if you knock him off the ship, he suddenly, you see him like jump back up onto the ship, and he's going, "You'll not get me, other hand."
Yeah,
because the crocodile's down there.
Yeah, you look and you'll see that croc trying to
circling,
you know,
around
bite him in the ass.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, Hook was a great villain. You know, Hook is in Birth by Sleep as well, and he's even more difficult to beat than that.
Right.
You fight him as Ventus, and it took me a long time to beat him. Because you never want to go sword to sword with Hook. You want to hit him and run.
Yeah,
because he is like a swordsman.
Oh yeah, absolutely. He's a big time fencer.
All right, Hollow Bastion.
Hollow Bastion, I loved.
Probably my favorite world.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was just so interesting. There's so many different things about that world. You know, there's all
we find out so much there.
Yeah, it's the ultimate. Just, you know, it wraps everything up very beautifully.
And your optional party member there is the best optional party member you get for the entire game, which is the Beast.
Absolutely, yeah, hands down. Mm-hmm. He is a monster.
Yeah.
You know, he rips through Heartless. There is a good section of Hollow Bastion when you first go there that you have your Keyblade taken away from you, and you can no longer affect the Heartless in any way. And
you can with magic.
With magic, yeah. But no, you get... You know,
I just sit back and let the Beast do it.
Yeah, he's a force. He's on a mission.
The Beast is more than enough to take care of all that.
The Beast is on a mission.
A mission of love.
Yes.
Because he's there for Belle.
Mm-hmm.
And that scene where he's reunited with Belle is really nice.
It's very touching.
Yeah. And that's when you get the Rumble Rose or whatever it is.
Divine Rose. That's actually one of my favorite Keyblades in the game.
Yep.
I was going to say, that one's pretty.
Yeah, it's purple. And
so you said strong, but I'm like, aesthetically, it's
very
pretty.
Very strong. Yeah, we'll go with that.
We actually find my favorite Keyblade in Hollow Bastion as well, which is the Oblivion.
Yeah, that is a wonderful looking Keyblade.
There are two Keyblades in this game that represent Kairi and Riku.
Right.
The Oathkeeper is Kairi, and the Oblivion is Riku. And that is why Roxas fights with the Oblivion and the Oathkeeper.
Exactly.
Because it's Kairi and Riku. And it also is indicative of Roxas as a nobody who is supposed to be a being of darkness, but is trying to find the light.
Exactly.
And he is walking that line. And it makes perfect sense that he has the white Keyblade on one side of him and the black Keyblade on the other side of him. And totally cool.
A lot of symbolism there.
Yeah, the game is so ripe with symbolism. The second you see Roxas pull out two Keyblades the first time, which is in the secret ending of the game.
Of what?
Of Kingdom Hearts.
In Roxas?
Yeah. You see Roxas in an Organization 13 cloak.
Oh wow!
And he and Reek, he
oh right right right
he's
yeah,
jumped by all the Heartless in the yes. in the
name is escaping me of the town, that big city.
Yeah, where the nobodies come from. I think the world that never was, or
the world that never was.
And Roxas is just going ape on all these Heartless with two Keyblades, and then he throws one to Riku.
Yeah,
and then him and Riku like fight back to back against the Heartless.
That's a long title for a town.
The world that never was.
Why don't they just call it Never Was?
Yeah.
Never Was.
I'm sure they do.
We should write to them.
Absolutely. I think I will.
WTNW, man. I heart WTNW. Hollow Bastion has a Maleficent boss fight, which we pointed out earlier. Is both the first one's awesome. The second one is belligerently hard.
Right.
It has both Riku boss fights.
Mm-hmm.
First one is awesome. Second one's belligerently hard.
And it's funny that the secret, you know, the special boss fight in Final Mix, the Xehanort boss fight, is a lot like the second Riku fight. He uses a lot of his same, you know, techniques, a lot of his same moves.
Because he is, right, you know.
Exactly. Not going
say
too
it.
Far
you
ahead.
Can't say it, no.
Are we going to... Yeah, we can.
Nah.
Anybody tuning in probably played the other one, so let's be real.
All right, because it is Xehanort's nobody, and Riku is possessed by Xehanort's Heartless, which is Ansem.
Right.
So they are technically the same person that you're fighting.
Exactly, yeah. The second Riku fight, you're not actually fighting Riku.
You're fighting Ansem.
You're fighting Ansem. Well, Xehanort. Yeah. Well, handsome.
And then you fight... So, you know, you do Hollow Bastion, and then the last thing to do is just, you know, End of the World.
Yeah, End of the World is exactly
they got some,
as it says.
They
end
got
of the world.
Some ridiculous Heartless there, though.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of difficult Heartless. And it's a very short world as far as not a lot of screens, not a lot of scenarios to go through, but you basically play through a memory, I guess, of every world that you've been through.
Yeah.
On your way to the end.
Yeah,
end game.
It's a perfect final level to any video game.
Yeah, absolutely. Revisiting everywhere that you've been.
Yeah, and I love the boss fight where you actually get to fight that big black bat demon from Fantasia.
Right, right.
When I saw that, I was like, oh.
Yeah,
like,
I was so excited. That was really cool that they decided to put that in there.
Yeah. And then, you know, Ansem, he's your typical square Onyx villain. He's he's got an effeminate, delicate face.
Yep.
He has long silver hair.
Yep, fanatical.
Very fanatical and a beast when you fight him. I love the Ansem fight. I love how he's got the Guardian that comes up in front of him. And
right.
It's really great.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoy it. It's a good final boss fight.
Absolutely.
Let's see. Anything else we need to discuss about this one? You know what I've always found? I feel like Kingdom Hearts is kind of the bastard child of the Disney company and that it's never really like... You know, I mean, I host a Walt Disney World podcast here on the White Dragon Podcast Network, Two Men and the Mouse. Check it out.
Little plug.
Yeah, but I feel as though I would love to see Kingdom Hearts stuff in the parks.
Absolutely.
There was a rumor that Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party one year, there was a Sora that you could take pictures with, but I've never seen any.
But how come they don't? It is a Disney product after all.
I don't
right?
know. I don't know if there's licensing with Square about those characters, but yeah. I would love... Like, look, if I could take a picture of Mickey with his Keyblade, I mean...
Oh, God, yeah, that's it. That's,
forget about it.
And I'm sure you're not the only one that wants to see that, too.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The demand is there.
I mean, it's
I think
possible they're just not aware of how big it is, you know, as far
oh,
as...
Oh, I'm sure they are. They see the sales numbers.
Yeah, I mean, sales numbers aside, but, I mean, it's you know, it's gaming, and then it's Disney. You know,
so you think it's dwindling now a little bit, maybe?
Kingdom Hearts?
Yeah.
It was,
or is it still holding strong?
With this most recent E3, that has definitely rekindled those fires.
Yeah.
They announced
E3 showed 1 30-second commercial, and it reignited the Kingdom Hearts fever.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was one of the biggest takeaways from this year's E3 was that there will be one day a Kingdom Hearts 3.
And
that
they showed you nothing and told you nothing.
Right.
Just the promise of this game was enough to make people go nuts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm going nuts.
Yeah, oh, me too. And the thing they showed you was awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I liked that it was Sora, Donald, and Goofy again.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked that the Heartless were back.
Right, right.
Because, you know, in the other games, there's not as many Heartless.
Right, right. And it's rumored and almost confirmed, I think, that this is the end of the Xehanort saga.
The Xehanort saga. The series itself will continue, but this is the end of Xehanort as the main villain.
Yeah.
And I think you're going to be dealing with Master Xehanort here, which is like the Xehanort from Birth by Sleep.
Okay.
Which you don't know anything about yet.
Not yet.
But yeah, I would love to see more Kingdom Hearts merchandise come out of Disney. I'd love to see more of a presence or a presence at all. I mean, the most I ever saw was when we went for, when Jackie and I went one year, it was right when Birth by Sleep came out, and they had Birth by Sleep in a couple of the gift shops.
Of the actual game?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's about it.
Yeah, that's weird to me. I feel like that's a big untapped resource that they can really use.
Definitely.
And how about, real quick before we end, I want to talk about the usage of Mickey in the game, or lack thereof.
Lack thereof is
people
very...
were pissed about that, right?
Yeah.
You just see him
yeah.
at the very end.
Yeah, I mean, he's on the
not
cover.
Not even.
He's on the cover of the game.
Yep.
You know, he's mentioned King Mickey throughout the entire game.
They very rarely do they call him King Mickey throughout the like they never
well, actually,
actually
they just say the king.
They just say the king. Like you're not supposed to know who he is, but you know who he
right.
is.
You know who he is. Yeah, and that
see
but,
a mouse
but yeah,
silhouette
he,
at the end.
He just wasn't quite there. I'm not sure why they wanted to do that. Maybe they were saving him for future games.
I guess. Well, you know, if there were complaints regarding the lack of Mickey in that game, they certainly made up for it in the other games because Kingdom Hearts 2. I mean, he is everywhere, man, and
absolutely.
He is Yoda in that game.
Oh, absolutely.
Like he is flipping and doing a million backflips and barrel rolls with his Keyblade.
Saves you from the dead if need be every now and then.
Yep, if you die in Kingdom Hearts 2, you can make a selection that says, like, I'm not giving up yet, and then Mickey jumps in to save you, and you play as Mickey until Mickey has enough energy to revive Sora.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's a nice use of him, but again, it begs the question as to why that wasn't And more involved in the first
game. Yeah, I mean, he's heavily involved in Chain of Memories. He's heavily involved in Birth by Sleep as well.
Mm-hmm.
He's all over the place in the other games.
I think they knew. They were just building it up to that. Yeah. You know, and that Trinity as it exists was pretty solid,
right,
and people liked it. And, you know, despite the fact that you don't even see Mickey until the very end and it's just a silhouette of him,
right,
I think people were happy with what they had so far. And if they would have had him as an optional extra player,
it might have been a little much.
And who would you give up, I guess? I don't know.
Well, with Mickey, I think you also get into the trap of other Keyblade Masters, because Mickey's a Keyblade Master.
That's right. True. That's
another
good point.
Yeah, in Kingdom Hearts 1, you weren't really too aware of that.
Yeah, and in the end, when he pulls out a Keyblade with the reverse colors of Sora's, you're just like, whoa, Mickey's got a Keyblade. And yeah, they locked
it. They were probably going for that effect, that exact response.
Yeah. It's like you realize there are other Keyblades out there. Well, I mean, Riku had a Keyblade at one point too, or Ansem.
Yeah, yeah, he had his little his version,
his dark Keyblade.
But those guys are bad.
Yeah.
So you figure there's just one of light, maybe.
Yeah, the Keyblade that could unlock people's hearts.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, real quick, I think also the fact that you know, the entire game you went through, and Kairi was technically with you the entire time you were searching for her. Because her heart was inside of Sora, I think that's awesome.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's the whole, you know, the age old, you know, what you're searching for was within you the entire time.
Yes, and this is just a literal interpretation of that.
Yeah. Right, right. it's a real, real beautiful point when it's, you know, and that's what I kind of love about it, is that it's sort of a romantic story, but it's not, because they're kids.
Yeah, they are.
They're just
they're very much kids.
They're best friends. And you can argue that Sora was just as excited to see Riku as he was Kairi.
Well, a lot of people do make that argument for different reasons.
A lot of people go a little overboard on that argument.
A lot of fan fiction out there that...
shipping those
two?
Yes.
Really? Yeah. But, I mean, I can't see that that's a point of a Disney game. But,
no,
but yeah, moving on from that, it's just, it's a really great story that doesn't have to be romantic in order to make a profound point.
Agreed.
You know, and that I love that. And then maybe that might be where it ends up in Kingdom Hearts 3 or beyond. But it doesn't have to. I'm totally cool with this being a story about a guy who's just desperate to help out his friends.
I agree. He's the ultimate good guy, Sora. He's the ultimate guy with great intentions, the ultimate pal, the ultimate you know, guy who's always there for you. Anything else to add, guys, before we close for this one?
No, that's pretty much it. Sorry, I couldn't contribute as much, but I haven't really played it very
lightning
recently.
Lightning round, favorite Keyblade?
Okay.
And why?
Go ahead. What's yours?
Mine, to start off, I'll say two. My favorite aesthetic, my favorite looking Keyblade has got to be the One-Winged Angel, only because I actually got it and received it. And it is a beautiful thing. And it is actually really a cool-looking Keyblade. But the actual Keyblade that I like the most is actually the Spellbinder. It's a little bit different.
Is that the one you get? No.
So it's the one that Merlin actually gives you.
Yes.
In order for completing your magic repertoire, I guess. And it's just really cool. It's a cool looking Keyblade. You know, it really fits with the character, and it does increase your magic ability a little bit. So if you're a guy like me who gave up the wand, then you get a little bit. Actually, well, not a guy like me, but a guy that gave up the wand. You get a little bit more magic power in there,
right,
and you can you know, keep going on with your magic that way. Mm. So that was a pretty cool one. I liked that one a lot.
Jackie, any Keyblade that you like the most?
Can I get a list?
Well, there was the Divine Rose. There was, I know you liked that one. You liked the Oblivion.
With attributes, please?
Oh, talk to TJ.
basically, they were, let's see if we can pull some up real quick.
I'll give you mine in the meantime.
Yeah, go ahead.
Kingdom Key. The original.
That's what I figured.
Mm. Yep. I love the Kingdom Key. And in fact, like, if I had ever gotten to the point where I was, like, maxed out stats, I would go back to the Kingdom Key.
Yeah, and you know what you do
is
end
it the strongest
up
one
that
you have?
No.
It's actually the weakest one that you have.
It's your first one.
But
it's like
it is
the equivalent
classic
of Buster Sword.
Okay.
You got the Divine Rose, you've got the Oblivion, you got the Oathkeeper, the Crab Claw. Nobody likes the Crab Claw. Well, you can guess where you get that from.
Yeah, the Crab Claw was no good. There was one of them that I actually really liked from beating. Once you go back to the Colosseum, and you beat the Hercules Cup, I think.
Yeah.
Once you beat Cloud,
Metal Chocobo.
He gives you the Metal Chocobo.
Yeah,
which
I was
is
just
really
say.
Cool. That was all. It was a nice little.
That's the one I go to Hollow Bastion with, Metal Chocobo.
Yeah, yeah, because it's long, has a really nice reach. It's a cool silver looking one, and at the very end of it, it has on the keychain of chocobo. It has a little chocobo sitting there. So it's a nice little nod to
that's
the
my
whole
favorite
Final
one.
Fantasy
there
series.
You go.
Yep, there
yep.
we go. That's Jack's favorite. It also kind of looks like what if the Buster Sword was a Keyblade?
Exactly. Yeah. In So basically, we have Kingdom Key, Oathkeeper, and Oblivion. We've talked about Ultima Weapon is your result of the final synthesis, which is just such a pain, but very worth it. Because the Ultima Weapon is exactly that. It is ultimate. It is fantastic. You got your Kingdom Key. Lady Luck that you got from Wonderland, which was kind of nice. It increased a little bit of your chance of getting some interesting items, goodies, little bit of a increased risk chance of a drop. Olympia, you got from
Hercules,
Olympus, Jungle King, Three Wishes, Pumpkinhead, Wishing Star, Crab Claw.
Pumpkinhead
Fairy
looks
Harp.
Cool.
Pumpkinhead is a really cool one. Again, one of I'm a big fan of the longer ones with the big reach, so you can kind of keep your distance and not have to worry about getting crushed.
Yeah,
But yeah, overall in general. Definitely One Winged Angel is my favorite.
Yep.
But Ultimate Weapon, you said, was like the most powerful
Ultimate
one.
Weapon is the most powerful, hands
and
down.
How come nobody
reach.
Said that one's their favorite, then? Based on that, strength isn't everything?
It's an easy answer.
Aha.
Easy answer. Plus, you figure once you get to about level 80, there is actually a hidden damage cap in the game where you can only be a certain level of strength.
Right.
Once you get to that,
at that point,
Ultimate
you might
Weapon
as well go
is overkill.
At that point, you might as well go back to the Kingdom Key.
Right.
Really?
Yep.
Which I do.
There you go.
All right, folks. Well, that's going to wrap up our discussion of Kingdom Hearts 1. Thank you so much for joining us. If you want to give us any feedback, recommend a game, first review, you can send an email to wdpodcastnetwork@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed the show, I just ask that you please let somebody know about it. Tell a friend, rate, review us in iTunes. Folks, for TJ Bogart, for Jay Lee, Jack and Leon Kessler, I am Kevin Kessler. We will see you next week on Boss Fight. Game over.
See you, folks.